Catherine, you have a model that you've shared with us, laid out as a square, who on one side and what on another, global on the top, local on the bottom.
Right.
And you have talked about how we all tend to talk about the what. How do we change the system? How do we come up with a new model?
Right. How do we change the currency system? How do we change the banking system? How do we change the regulatory system as opposed to who's really running things and how do they do it and why are they behaving the way they're behaving? And how do we rebuild new political alignments so that we can start to make progress?
So what are some of your ideas as to how we can deal with the who side of the equation?
The first thing to see on the who side of the equation is to understand that we are uncertain as to who's really running things and why they're behaving the way they're behaving, and that it's important for us to figure that out. It's important for us to deal with that issue. I used to have a pastor in Washington say, if we can face it, God can fix it. We need to get out of our fear and turn and look at the real political problem. I once wrote an article, Meditations at the Crossroads, about the death of my mother. And in it, I talk about how the fact that you have all these different groups in America who are reacting to the death of loved ones by dealing with the thing that killed them, narcotics trafficking, nuclear testing and fallout, chemtrails. And what they don't seem to understand is all these things are being permitted by a governance and leadership. And their problem is not the chemtrails and the narcotics trafficking. Their problem is there's a group of people who are killing them. You know, so we have a group of people who's killing us. And we need to say, well, who are they and why are they killing us? And how do we prevent that? But we need to look at that. We need to understand we don't have an economic problem. We don't have a financial problem. We have a political problem. We are being governed and led by people who have invisible powers. They have the power to break the law. They have the power to kill with impunity. And they've stolen, my estimate, more than $40 trillion of our money in the last 15 years. And we can't afford that. We can't afford to have a group of people steal $40 trillion and then still govern us from a position of immense power because now they have it and we don't. We need to understand this. We need to deal with it. We need to ask questions. And it's going to take all of us talking about it, asking questions. So that's number one. Number two, how is it that they've kept us from doing this? How is it that they've kept us from having this conversation that I want to have? Well, to me, the most important way they've kept us from having that conversation is divide and conquer. Okay? The most important divide and conquer is men and women. Okay? Men distrusting women, women distrusting men. When I, as an investment advisor, many times I've been hired into a family where the woman and the man disagree about money. And it's because the woman is looking at the living systems and saying, the financial system is killing life. It's killing people. It can't possibly make economic sense, and it scares them. And they say, well, I want to know what our money's doing and where it's going, and I'm scared. I don't trust. A lot of this was before 2008. They could intuitively understand that their money was at risk, but they couldn't explain how in financial terms. And meantime, the husband is saying, well, wait a minute. You know, I'm responsible to make sure there's plenty of provision for the household, and I can't afford to pull my money out of the stock market and do these crazy things you're proposing because I want to make sure there's enough money. You know, so they're both right and they're both wrong, and they don't have a common language to talk to each other. And what you'll find when you dig down is the men and women are sabotaging each other because they don't have a common language and they've been played. Okay? So a lot of times a man comes home and says, honey, this corporation's doing really crazy things. I want to leave. And the wife says, oh, no, I need you to support the family and take care of us. And, you know, and again, you get this divide and conquer. What I've discovered is where men and women can really communicate, see the game and how they're being played as a matter of economic warfare, and they start to conspire together to outwit the tapeworm when it comes to their minds, their bodies, and their money, whoa, that's when things get powerful. So a lot of the sexual politics you hear in the campaigns, you know, whether it's heterosexual versus homosexual or men versus women, or a lot of that is meant to divide and conquer in very, very evil ways. And it's unbelievably successful. You know, there are all sorts of different trigger issues. And the goal is to get everybody fighting on non-monetary issues while they steal all our money. Okay. Another one which is becoming increasingly important after male and female is generations. Now, if you look at rebuilding the economy in a county, the first thing you need to get is the young people, you know, because they're great with the new technology and the tools, and you need the young people being invested in and bred up and supported by both the older people who are wise and have some capital, and then the middle generation who's running things and knows how to do things. And a lot of rebuilding the economy is getting those three generations in alignment and serving each other in a way that makes money, you know, for everybody. So that's how you rebuild the economy. Well, we have an enormous effort to persuade young people that baby boomers are their enemies and everything that's happening to them is the fault of baby boomers, and baby boomers are old and stupid and not good at the technology. And so there's all this turning of the generations against each other, and it's unbelievably destructive to real solutions because, in fact, what you need is you need those three groups working together. And we need the boomers and the middle generation lifting up the young people, okay, and building them up as our future. Very, very expensive. And then the last is white and black. The last election was fantastically successful. On one side, you have Hispanic and minority communities voting for one of the candidates and all the white guys voting for the other candidate. Unbelievably destructive in terms of racial politics, you know, keeping those groups hating each other. It was fantastically successful. Because I'm convinced absolutely that the decision was made last summer by Mr. Global that Obama would be the president, but they wanted to have a campaign that really played divide and conquer and really pitted everybody against each other, because that's how you keep control. Now we have tremendous division. It was really interesting. I once upon a time wrote a letter to Condoleezza Rice that was very critical of her conduct as national security advisor. And I found myself getting an overwhelming rush of support from all of these Caucasian men who felt that they couldn't say anything nasty to Condoleezza Rice because she was a black woman, and that would be dangerous because of the politics of race and sex. It was frightening because they didn't feel free to exercise their right of free speech, literally because of this kind of divide and conquer politics. And many is the time you'll see it happened to me when I got fired as FHA commissioner. They moved the head of Ginnie Mae, who was an African-American man, wonderful guy, in. Many years later, he ran into one of my assistants at the airport because he hadn't realized what the game was. And he said, would you tell Catherine that I want her to know how terribly sorry I am? Because now I understand how I was used. And I understand she was trying to run the place clean. They wanted to run it dirty, so they needed to turn over. And by putting in a black guy, you know, Congress couldn't yelp. And I was used, and I let myself be used, and now I understand, and I'm sorry. And I really want her to know that. But all across America, you'll see different ways that the different races are used in these political correct games to sort of trump each other. And the racial politics has gotten very bad. Now, one of the things I've discovered is if you can heal the male-female communication, a lot of the racial politics can get sorted out, oddly enough, because within the family or the partnership unit, the male and female can then be much smarter about healing whatever the racial politics are. You know, and then, of course, you have the religious stuff on top of that. And what's interesting is 9 times out of 10, even the smartest people I know get tricked right into those ideological battles, whether it's male versus female, Christians versus, you know, they get tricked right into it. They get suckered right into it. And what they don't understand is they're being played. And while they are sitting fighting about whatever this ideological yaya is, their money's getting stolen. And one of the things I will tell you about the people who run this planet is that they invest more time and money than anybody can possibly imagine on human resources. When I tell you they know before you're born, when you're in the womb, they know who you are. They have breeding programs. They care tremendously about genes and family lineage and bloodlines and all of that. And what is amazing is how much they track you. Now, if you look at no education, you know, No Child Left Behind, and all the new testing and the digital information systems, they now have a way to track every child in very deep, invasive ways from the time that they are born, okay? And believe you me, they are constantly trying to figure out who's got what talent and how do we move these people in a way that best serves the pro-centralization team. They invest massively in human resources. And what is amazing is how much time and money they spend at it. You know, I've lived in it. It used to amaze me. You know, somebody would call up and say, dear, well, it's really important now that you, you know, you put this on your resume. And I thought, you know, how are they watching and tracking all of this stuff? No, it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. And then suddenly you'd get an award and it didn't make any sense. And there'd be some big award dinner and you'd get this award and you'd think, why is this happening? You'd realize, oh, they need this on my resume now. It was incredible to me how well managed the whole thing was and how deeply invested they were in sort of managing this.
And you could see how they were managing you.
I could see what I experienced. And you thought, wow, you know, there's a committee and they're running this and they think about it and they, you know, they have people and they, you know, I mean, there is a giant human resources department in the sky. There really is.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. Eustace Mullen wrote a great description in one, I think it was in his book on the New World Order, where he describes, and this is one of the reasons the universities have become so important to them and why they want everybody in a student loan debt trap, because, you know, they want to know exactly what their talents are, but they want to be able to control them. They want them on a leash. So it's quite remarkable. Now, what's amazing is, given how much they invest in human resources, how we are completely oblivious to it. We are completely blind to the whole issue of, okay, what's the human talent in this neighborhood? What's the human talent in this enterprise? How do we lift it up? How do we manage it? How do we collaborate in a way that's win-win? You know, how do we lift and build each other up? Instead, we're tearing each other down. The tearing down of humans by other humans in this culture is unbelievable. If you turn on a TV, you know, I haven't owned a TV since 1984, except I had an interior decorator who bought one for me when I was in the Bush administration without my permission, and then I gave it away. But she said, Fitz, you have to have a TV if you work in the government. Anyway, so what you'll see on TV, and when I'm in a hotel or motel, I'll usually turn it on and watch it, is tremendous denigration. You know, they're teaching human denigration by other humans.
Yes.
Humans denigrating other humans. And that's all part of the divide and conquer, because they control through the who. So as long as they can create fashionable and socially satisfying ways that we can go to work on what solutions and keep us divide and conquered on the who side, they control. And we need to come out of that trance. We need to say, you know something? I want to be part of real solutions, authentic solutions. Start with myself. I come clean in all the ways we talked about. And then I network out. I turn around in my family and network. And I say, who are the positive people getting something done here? And how can I lift them up? You know, and we work out from there. Imagine if everybody woke up tomorrow and took their money out of the five banks that have done the worst criminal stuff. Whoa! You know, talk about change. Whoa! So, each one of us shifting our own world to authentic makes a huge difference.